Well, it's hard to believe we've come to the last evening of this series of lessons. I'm very thankful for so many of y'all who've been here for every session. It has been good for me to be here, and I would be ungrateful if I didn't stop and just say a few words of thanks to those who have had me over to eat. There's a sign I saw when I first came in on Saturday. It said Roanoke, and something about being the capital of unique eating places. I think Cletus and Phyllis's goal this week was to carry me to every one of them. And I can say no to everything but temptation, so I gladly went. But they have certainly taken good care of me. I highly recommend the Copeland Hotel if you ever need a place to stay. And it's been a good week, and I appreciate some of y'all getting to meet for the first time. A lot of y'all just to be reassociated with, and it's always good to be in these arrangements. I hope you learn to appreciate these things. You know, life as you get older kind of changes your perspective just a little bit. You know, we're never going to be in this exact situation ever again. You know, some people will move away, and some folks may pass away, and some may fall away. So try to always enjoy the moment, live in the moment that you have, and appreciate the blessings that we have as they are in our lives. If you read the flyer, you know tonight we're going to talk about good from bad. And the overall idea is there, I should be able to learn something beneficial when something bad happens to me. It's a lot easier to feel sorry for ourselves. It's a lot easier to have us a little pity party, you know, just sit back and, woe is me. No one else has ever had to face what I'm having to face. Or if they have, it's not as bad as my condition, you know, right now may be. And that's a very easy attitude to develop, but it's very, very hurtful to the cause. You know, 2 Corinthians 10 verse 13 tells us that there is no temptation. Now listen to this. The next time you have your lip all pooched out and you're all, you know, pouting and worried about how bad things are going, there is no temptation that has befallen you except that which is common to man. Behold, God is faithful and will not suffer you or allow you to be tempted above that which you are able, but will with every temptation also provide a means of escape. Now, I hate what I see in our culture. You might call it the emasculation of our culture, where we try to beat men down and teach them to act like women, and women just act like a bunch of crybabies, and everybody's always a victim, and everything's wrong with them, and nobody can stand up and work their way through anything. That's not the Bible way. That's not God's way. God expects us to face the trials of life and push through them. Why do I need promises like Matthew 28, 18 through 20? There at the end, after he gives the Great Commission, he says, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the earth. Why do I need that promise? Because there are going to be days when you may doubt that. There may be days when you see the world through tear-filled eyes. When your strong, confident step stutters just a little bit. When those broad shoulders that can handle anything maybe can't. And in those days, if we're not careful, if our mind's not right, if we're not totally committed to what we need to be doing, we'll quit. You cannot be a quitter and go to heaven. How many verses encourage us to finish the fight, finish the race? Whatever your hand finds to do, do with all of your might. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, all thy mind, all thy soul, and all thy strength. A good athlete is never beaten. He just runs out of time. Right? That's kind of how it should be in Christianity. The devil can't beat us. You know he cannot. 1 John 4 and verse 4, he who is within us is greater than he that's in the world. Is that not true? Yes. Who's stronger, Jesus or the devil? Jesus. Who's going to wind up in hell? I wrote an article one time years ago. I think it shocked some people, entitled, The Devil Burns in Hell Too. It's not like a cartoon version with Looney Tunes, and he's down there in heaven, in hell just having a high whole time. It was created to punish him. If we stay with Christ, we win. But a lot of folks get defeated. I love the story about Thomas Edison. Whenever he invented that filament light, you know, he had a lot of experiments that didn't work out. The story is about 3,000 experiments. 3,000 times he did it and just didn't work. Then just failure. So this reporter came down and he's interviewing Mr. Edison. And he says, Mr. Edison, How does it feel to have failed 3,000 times? To which he says, young man, I have never failed. I have discovered 3,000 ways it cannot be done. And you see the difference? Too many of us become the victims of flea trainers. You know what a flea trainer is? You get you a little jar, like a pimento jar, a little short jar, and you put a flea in there. And that flea, he'll jump right out. But you put a flea in there and put the lid on there. And he will jump and he'll hit his head. He'll jump and he'll hit his head. He'll jump and he'll hit his head. But after he bangs his head enough times, he'll quit jumping quite as high. Once he quits jumping higher than that lid, you can take the lid off and he'll never jump out. The devil does that to us, brethren. We whack our head a few times. Life gets tough a few times. And you start having those thoughts. Well, is it doing any good? I'm trying to do the right thing. If you've read your Bible, you understand this. Sometimes we will suffer because we do the right thing. We ask the question sometimes, what am I doing wrong? Why do you think God wrote the book of Job and preserved it for us? To falsify that notion. It is a human tendency. I think we probably all think about it. We were joking the other day. But the Cletus said something about, you know, the drought. I told him, I got a guy back home, says, hey, you need to start turning that contribution in, you know. It's like, why ain't it raining? Well, we're doing something wrong. Well, not necessarily. Now, you need to be praying for rain. If y'all have enough, pray that we get some. It's dry back home, right? But it's not because we're doing something bad. 1954. Something happened, never had happened before. There was a long-distance runner in England. By the name of Roger Bannister. Roger Bannister was determined to break the 4-minute mile. No one had ever run faster than 4 minutes in the mile. And doctors would get together and talk about it, and they had convinced themselves it's not even humanly possible. If you could run that fast for that long, the human heart might just explode. It cannot be done. But then here comes Roger Bannister and his teammates. And they measured strides, and they had it down. He had a different pacer for every lap. And in 1954, he broke the 4-minute mile. I think it was 3:59.3 or something. Yeah, he broke the 4-minute mile. Do you know since he broke it, over 1,400 times it has been broken. See, the lid had to be shown to have been removed. We cannot sit back and say, well, we can't. Most of us, we don't know what we can and can't do because we've never really tried to do what God asks us to do. Not with all of our effort. Sometimes you'll talk to somebody, well, back in 1971, we tried that and it didn't work. Well, why don't we try it again? A few things have changed since 71. It's kind of like fishing. You ever gone fishing? I went fishing once, threw that lure out there, didn't catch nothing. Went home. Is that how you catch fish? You better chunk that lure again and throw it again and throw it again. Same thing with evangelism. People today don't want to hear the gospel. That has been coming off the lips of lazy Christians since the first century. Most of our neighbors have never heard the gospel. Not really. Maybe I'm just optimistic, but in my heart of hearts, I think if more people actually understood what the Bible really said, there'd be more interest in it. Some of the shame of congregations try to, you know, fashion themselves according to what is out there in the denominationalism. We actually just keep the gospel hidden for another generation sometimes. Don't be constrained by what somebody tells you you can't do. You take Job. We draw great strength from what he accomplished. How about Joseph? That is a story of woe, brethren. We think of, oh, what a great guy Joseph was. Yeah, it's great for us to look at it. It wasn't very much fun for him to go through it. Wind up, you know, his brothers wanted to kill him. Then they finally sold him into slavery. And he was mistreated all of his life. His youth was taken. His teens were taken. His 20s were taken. Most of his 30s were taken. He's a slave. Then he's accused of being a rapist. Then he's thrown into prison. Then finally, decades after he's taken from his father, he's raised. But you understand that every single negative event that happened in his life was like a master artisan chipping away at a piece of marble. And by the time he's elevated by Pharaoh, the conditions of life he had gone through had given him the reservoirs of strength and wisdom and confidence in God to be ready for that challenge. You don't get ready to run a country like Egypt, the biggest country in the world at the time, laying on a hammock, sipping on iced tea. And you don't become a real strong man or woman of the faith if everything in your life is always easy. Is always, you know, the way that we wish it were. So I want us as Christians to understand that when, I didn't say if, you are going to go through them. So there are two kinds of people in this room right now. Those who have problems and those who are going to. That's a fact. And the deciding factor on where we spend eternity is very much going to be based on how we deal with adversity when it comes. Do I face it God's way or the devil's way? Have you ever seen why some people see an obstacle when others see an opportunity? To some people, it's a stumbling block. To others, it is a stepping stone. And it all has to do with attitude. We're back to Thomas Edison. You're back to the old saying, if the world gives you lemons, what? Cry about it. No, you make lemonade, right? We're real good sometimes about whining about what we don't have. Well, if I just had this, if I just had that, remind me of these two old boys I heard about. They're sitting on the back porch. One of them looks across the porch and says, "Hey, Joe." Joe says, "What?" He said, "If you had $2 million, would you give me $1 million of it?" That first guy thinks a second and says, "All right, Bob, you're asking me if I had $2 million, would I give you $1 million of it?" "Yes, sir, that's what I'm asking you." He says, "Yeah, you're my best friend. I love you like a brother. Yes, if I had $2 million, I would give you $1 million of it." First guy looks back on there and says, "Hey, Joe." He said, "What?" He said, "Will you give me a pig?" He said, "It ain't no fair, Bob. You know I've got two pigs." Do we play that game with God? "Oh, if I had a great, beautiful voice, I would lead singing. Oh, if I had a big job, I'd give some money to the building project. Oh, if I had this, I would do that." It's very, very easy to promise God things I don't have. God has never required that of us. What he requires of us is to give him what we do have. I don't absolve myself from my responsibility of saying, "Well, if I had all the gifts that Cletus had, I could do this." Well, I appreciate what he's got. He has an obligation to do what he can do. I have to do what I can do. You have to do what you can do. The parable of the talent shows us that. The 5-2 and one talent man. There was no difference in the eyes of God in any of those three people except based on what they did or did not do with what he'd given them. You go back and read Matthew 25 sometime. Those are three judgment parables. And every category of lost in all three of those parables, they were lost for neglect, for failing to do what they should have done. I don't know y'all this well, so this may be a flat-out lie. If it is, Joey, you can correct me later. I don't think all of y'all struggle a whole lot with murder, drug addiction, and adultery. I hope that's not really commonplace around here. But not doing what we should do, that probably hits a lot closer to home. Not a chalkboard up here or a whiteboard up here. I can start drawing zeros. You know, I don't do this, and 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 draw me a line. All that equals what? Nothing. It's not just about what I don't do. Some people are real proud of, "I don't drink, I don't cuss, and I don't do this, I don't." That's fine. You shouldn't. But what do we do for the cause of Christ? I love the picture of Nehemiah. Those people have a sword in one hand. They're fighting off the enemy when they try to stop them from building the city. And they have a trowel in the other hand, a concrete trowel. They're putting out mortar and they're putting up bricks. That's the Christian. We fight with the enemies of the cross and we build up the kingdom. We build up each other. We encourage each other. We grow as a person. And we lift others with us. Do we do that? Does it sound real cute? Oh, that sounds real good. But what do we do it? With consistency. That being said, let's think about a few situations of some of the benefits that I can gain when something bad happens to me. I want to tell you this now. See, it's very easy. We're sitting here. Y'all are all pretty. Your hair is fixed. You smell good. Your makeup's all right. Stephen, yours needs work. But, you know, for the most, things are good. It's a lot better to have this conversation now than in the emergency room, than at the funeral home, than at the jail. You get your mind right. I tell the kids, I try to work a lot with our high school and junior high kids. You try to deal with the situation. You don't wait till you're in the back seat of a car with somebody. By the way, you shouldn't be there. But you don't get yourself in those situations and then wonder, what do I do next? No, we plan ahead. We don't get in that situation. So this is to let you plan ahead. Do not let your mind drag you someplace you should never get when something bad happens to you. Disadvantages become advantages. They help me when they cause me to depend on God more. Isn't our life typically, our prayer life typically, more focused and more consistent during days of trouble than when everything's easy and just going along? And I don't think you forget to pray on a day when somebody's struggling with cancer, do you? You don't forget to pray on a day when somebody's in the hospital trying to recover from a serious accident. You don't forget to pray on those days. Like I told them back home, it's funny, we never pray for rain except for June, July, and August. Right? You never notice it till it's gone. Look at a few verses along this line. Think about some of these things that are said by David. Psalm 46 and verse 1. God is our refuge and our strength. He is very present in the time of trouble. I'm not very patient with whiners. Don't have much use for them. There's only two kinds of problems you can have. I told you where to go. There's only two kinds of people, either those with them or those who are going to have them. But there's only two kinds of problems. There are those you can fix and those you cannot. Now, isn't that true? That's a logical conclusion. If it's a problem I can fix, guess what? Fix it. Problem solved. It's gone. If it's a problem I cannot get rid of, then I've got to learn to live with it. What I cannot do is worry about it. If you truly cannot stop it, fix it, change it at all, then what good does it do to flip-flop at night and not sleep and worry yourself sick about it? You ever thought about that? Some folks do. I'm not trying to make light of problems. Problems are real, but they're not ungetoverable if we have our mind, as it should be, focused on these things. You think David didn't have problems? I love reading when David is running at various times from King Saul. When his own son rebels against him and rapes his wives in the street of the city to shame him, I would say that's a problem. How about you? He would say things like, "Father, there is but a step between me and death." It's so easy to blow our problems out of proportion. If your problem kills you, you go to heaven. So what's the problem? Right? There is no great mystery here. You know how your life ends? You'd be laying in a box up here. If they don't have much money, you'd be in a little bitty box, you know, they'll cremate you or something. But the point doesn't matter. What happens to the body doesn't matter. At the end comes for us all. What matters is what you do in the meantime. There's no reason to let these things render us worthless to our families, to our congregations. There are people who curl up in a ball and suck their thumb for years. Where do you find that in the Bible? You don't have a God-given right to be depressed all your adult life. I'm supposed to have my eyes on other people's needs, am I not? I'm supposed to be helping those who cannot help themselves. I'm supposed to be a tool to be utilized by God in His kingdom. This self-focus ruins us, brethren. I don't feel like this. I just can't get over it. I've heard that sometimes. Women come off. Well, I just don't know how to get past this. I do. Quit crying about it. Get dressed. Put your face on and go back to being a mom. Go back to helping the church. Go back to teaching Bible class. Quit worrying about yourself and start serving God. Start serving others. You'll be amazed how much better you feel. You ever gotten up in a given morning, maybe you just didn't feel like really good, and you laid around in your sleepy clothes and felt bad all day? Or you get up, get a shower, shave your face, and get moving around. Guess what happens sometime? Get to feel a little bit better, don't you? It's kind of psychosomatic, some of this stuff is. The Bible deals with this. What did Paul do in prison? Gets thrown in prison, gets beaten, and what's he doing? He's singing. The problems are good for me if they turn me toward God. It sure turned Job toward God. Job was already faithful, but he wanted to have more information. God, why is this happening to me? If it makes me depend on God more, it's good for me. Psalm 18, 1 and 2. You know the election we just had 2 years ago? I'm assuming, you know, Obama had just gotten through. Hillary's running. Here comes Trump. And there's problems with both with him, too. I'm not trying to go political on this point. But you know the prayer I kept trying to tell people back home to pray? I want to happen in this election whatever needs to happen to make more Americans open to the gospel. That's our job, isn't it? Not worry so much about the fiscal this or the fiscal that. I'm worried about the spiritual souls of people, right? So even, by the way, I did not vote for Hillary, in case you're one, okay? I don't see how any Christian can raise their hand before God and say, I vote for a pro-abortionist and pro-homosexuality, anti-Bible, anything, period. That's a sin, by the way, to do that. Open your mouth and affirm that which the Bible condemns. But that aside, had it been the will of heaven that she win and we keep on going faster and faster and faster into confusion and defilement, all these areas. Brethren, the darker the days are in a culture, the brighter the gospel shines in contrast. You understand that? We should thank God that He counts us worthy to live here now to be that light, that shining light, that salt that preserves of Matthew 5, 13 through 16. My job and yours is not to whine about who's in the White House. Either way. Man, Nero. They didn't say a word about Nero. Just preached. And Paul got there, he preached the truth. And he converted a whole bunch of the guards there in the house of Caesar. By the way, Caesar cut his head off too. But that's okay. That was his best day. You understand? Paul's best day was when the axe fell. John the Immerser's best day was whenever he was beheaded. Is that not true? Your best day is the day you die faithful. Because then you have received your reward. Anything that happens to me that drives me closer to God, when your faith is challenged, we stand up stronger for our faith, don't we? When it's not challenged, it's a whole lot easier to kind of fall asleep. Back to the Psalm 18 passage, 1 and 2. I will love you, O Lord, my strength. My Lord is my rock. He's my fortress. He's my deliverer. He's my strength. I will trust in Him. He is my buckler, my stay, my strong right arm. Now you read that verse and then suck on your thumb some more. Doesn't work, does it? And David's a man who is very much acquainted with sorrows. David's own personal sins caused 70,000 people to die when he numbered the people. Without talking to God. His sin caused Uzzah to die when he said, move that thing on a new cart. He followed the method that the Philistines had used instead of searching the scriptures that God had given, and it cost the man his life. His personal sin cost his infant son that he conceived illegitimately with Bathsheba to die. It caused him and Bathsheba to lose a son. It caused him to betray Uzzah, take that back, Uriah. By the way, Uriah's not some stranger. You go back through and read that. Uriah was one of his 30 valiant men. Uriah had spilt blood at David's side. Uriah is there. He's one of the men that fights their way through the Philistine army to the water well at Bethlehem to get a drink and bring it back to David to drink. This is a good friend. I don't think Bathsheba's a stranger. They're neighbors. This is one of his best friend's wives. A best friend who's out at battle with Joab, and he's looking over the fence at his wife. It's a shame. By the way, it didn't crush him. He repents of it. He still serves God faithfully. I don't know what you've done. Everything we've done that's sin is similar. It might be different in the particulars, but it still is a betrayal of our commitment to God. It's a betrayal to truth and honor. It's a stain upon our soul. That man, if anybody had a whole list of things for which he could feel sorry for himself, I've never done anything right, I just need to go hide in a hole somewhere. No, that's not what God had planned for him. And it's not what He has planned for us. He says, God, You are my rock, You are my fortress, You are my buckler, that's a sword. You are my shield and my stay. Your strength should flow to you from God. That's why you've got to understand and read the scripture so I know what it's going to do for me. We should know what to do in virtually every single situation that comes up. If you don't, look it up. What do I do when this happens? Guess what? There's an example of someone who did it. You understand when you read through this, at least I see it this way. I find myself 100 times over in the Bible. Sometimes I read about one of those heroes and I say, you bitch, I had a day like that day once. Then I read back through one of those that fell on their face and I say, yeah, I've tasted that dirt myself. When I preach on the book of Esther, I love Esther, man, she's stout. I love Vashti, she's stout too. But I relate, honestly, a whole lot easier with Haman. How about you? old pride gets in there sometime. How dare they not, you know, respect me and blah, blah, blah. I use that on preachers sometime. You want to see Haman pop up in the preachers sometime? I tell you what happens. You get up here and preach. Maybe Joey does this next week. He preaches a masterful sermon, which I'm sure he does every week. So he preaches, and it's wonderful. And he heads out the door, and y'all keep saying, "Oh, Joey, great job. Brother Davis, that was awesome. That's just tremendous." But one person says, "That's terrible. You misrepresented that verse, and that verse. It's pitiful." And just storms off. Who do you think he's more likely to think about all Sunday afternoon? Right? It's just like Haman. He rides downtown here. Ooh, Haman the Great. Here comes Haman. What a guy Haman is. There's Mordecai. He ain't even looking at him. That stupid Mordecai. He didn't respect me. That's an attitude issue, isn't it? On us sometimes. Not saying you don't have to deal with the situation, but we shouldn't obsess over it. Here's a hint. Everybody in the world is not going to think you're just the best thing since sliced bread. That goes for all of us. And if our ego has to be stroked like that, we're liable to be brought down low. Heard about a preacher one time. He preached a sermon. He heads out the door. There's a woman there. Has a little 12-year-old boy beside her. And, you know, she got a good dose of it. She was really pumped up. She said, "Brother, I'm going to tell you, that was amazing. I am filled with your message." He thought, "Well, that sounds great. What about you, little boy?" He said, "Yeah, I got a belly full of it too." It's same thing, just worded it different, right? I'm not worried about being pleasing to men per se, but God. I've got to see these as opportunities of growth. Job 19, 25 and 26. Job 19, you're halfway through the book. And he says, "I know that my Redeemer lives." And we sing that song. I don't care what stage of life you're in. You let that burn into your mind. Think about what that says. I know that my Redeemer lives. I have read the Word of God. I have come to a point of trust. That's all that faith is. Pistis. Confidence, belief, trust in what God has said. My Redeemer, the one that died to forgive me for my sins, the one in whose blood I have been immersed, the one in whose light, whose image I try to live my life as a similitude, the one I know who is resurrected and who has promised to come back and get me. The one who told me in John 4 and verse 1, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. For in my Father's house there are many mansions." Hear him say this to you. "I go there now to build a place for you, Max. For you. If I go build you a place, I'm going to come back, Jay. That where I am, you can be also." Now, if you understand that and you believe that to your core, it is a principle to which you hold. You will not falter during the trial. Oh, it is still hurt. I don't think Paul enjoyed the actual landing of the blows on his back. When I read 2 Corinthians 11, 23 through 28, that's quite a list of terrible events he had to live through. But those events kept him determined and kept him understanding that God was his strength. Can we see that? When I just get hit between the eyes of the baseball bat when it comes to a trial, bam, something happens. It may be a job loss at a time when financially we really can't handle this. It might be an illness of someone. And what, I don't care what you plug in. You can make up your own problem. You've had plenty of them. I see a few gray hairs out there. When they come up, if I've got this settled, you may say it this way, "I don't see anywhere in the world it's going to work out. But I know it will. I know somehow he'll get me through." You older ones out there, do you remember years ago perhaps things were tight financially and you'd lose a job or you'd have a blowout or you'd have a transmission go out and you're like, "Man, I don't know what we're going to do." But then just out of the blue, you'd get some more work or something would come up or you'd get a little part-time job of some sort offered. Somehow, it would work out. Have you ever experienced that? I've had that happen a bunch. I mean, when, you know, you don't see how it's going to work and all of a sudden, you know. Now, and what I did back in the day, somebody would die. You do a funeral, might get paid $50. I'd buy groceries for a week. And I know it sounds bad, but sometimes something unexpected, that's bad, but it got us through the problem. Maybe something of your nature. Somebody just gives you something that helps you get past, you know, whatever. My point is, I don't always see how it's going to work out. But it does. Isn't that true? When these things happen to me, Jeremiah 10, 23, it reminds me it's not in my way. I can't direct my own steps. I can't trust my own self. Proverbs 5 and verse 3 and verse 5. God is able, how about Ephesians 3 and verse 20? God is able to do abundantly beyond what we ask. What do you ask God for? Do you ever, well, I don't ask for too much. What's too much to God? What can you ask for that cannot be done? Now, I don't know what's going to happen or not. I know Ephesians 5 verse 16 says, no, James 5 verse 16, the fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. The Ephesian writer says God can give you much more than you're even asking for. What are we asking for? Now, there's multi-levels to prayer. We should be thankful for what we have. I'll teach you some prayers, some things I think we should be praying for every day. Father, please put someone in my path today that I can help show Jesus. It'd be a nice prayer to pray, wouldn't it? How about this one? Father, put someone in my path today that can help me be a better example, that can help me see something more clearly. That's hopefully what these meetings do. The conversations we have. The Bible says steel sharpeneth steel, doesn't it? It is good for us as Christians to come together and exchange ideas. I love Bible class time, especially back home, because you can actually exchange ideas. Maybe you've said that verse out better than I have, and you see you have some insight, or you have a thought that is brilliant based on that passage. That's how we help each other go to heaven, brethren. And these trials help me understand. They teach me I need God. These bad things, these disadvantages can bring about this advantage or this good result. They can humble us. My daddy, when I was young, he used to say, boys, every time I brag on you, y'all mess up. You ever tell you that? Something like that, you know? Things are going real good. You ever had that, my boy, things just, you can't feel pretty good about yourself, and all of a sudden, bam, it's not where it was. Something happens. You can't control everything. You can't foresee everything. So it helps keeps us humble, doesn't it? Romans 12 and verse 3. You know, we talked about Romans 12, 1 and 2 last night. Verse 3 says that we should not think higher of ourselves than our ought. The Bible is unique here. It says a man should not think higher of himself than he ought, but you also should not think less of yourself than you should. I don't have time to spend much time on this, but I'll just throw it out there and you can work on it. Spend some time by yourself and try to become as self-aware as you can. See, there's the me that I show you. And you know, we all have our public persona. You show me what you want me to see, and I show you what I want you to see. And we have that which we show the world. But there's a you in there that I probably don't see, but you know is there. We need to be self-aware. We need to see ourselves as we are. Not as we wish we were. You know, not as we think, hope people think we are, but as we are. And these kind of problems can help keep us humble. You know, if we find a situation, we're just not sure how to get through it by ourselves, that's a good thing to understand. I need to get back to God's Word. I don't know it all on myself. I need God's help. It's not a bad thing to have to grab the phone and call one of you and say, listen, I don't know what to do here. Joy, do you have any advice? Have you ever faced this before? That's kind of what your elders are for, by the way. One part of their job. Feed the flock. That's not just what gets preached up here. When we get into these situations, call them. They're what they're supposed to be. They should be there and be helping, trying to give some counsel, try to give some advice, try to give some encouragement. Philippians 2, 3, and 4. With lowliness of mind, let us esteem one another. You know, some folks are so proud of themselves and what they do or don't do. It is very, very hard to see, keep our gaze on heaven if we're looking down our nose at our brethren. Think about that. You know, there are some folks that seem at least to possess a holier-than-thou attitude. Well, being holier than some other man, Paul said those who compare themselves by themselves are not wise. I can always come off looking pretty good against another man, especially if you let me pick the man. But the one to whom we're going to be compared is the Christ. Now, if we keep that in mind, I won't look down on anybody, will you? Who would we look down on? I don't look down on folks in sin, brethren. We're trying to find a way to communicate the gospel to them. I mean, people who are in, and if you have brethren who are struggling, if they understand they're struggling, they don't need me to slap them again. They need me to show them the way out. how to deal with it. Now, if they're belligerent in their sin, then certainly there's a marking process that's to be going through. Not against that. You've heard how I preach. I think I'm sweet, kind, and loving, but some folks think it's a little bit blunt from time to time. The point is, it depends on where you are. Jesus, he was a great, loving preacher, wasn't he? Yes. And he would slap the scribes and Pharisees right upside the head sometime. Read Matthew 23. Read John chapter 8. The parables we find to be so beautiful. The prodigal son. What a lovely story. He's insulting them. And the good Samaritan, I should say. The good Samaritan. Well, the prodigal son too. Prodigal son. They're making fun of him for eating with a bunch of sinners. He said, okay, I'll tell you a story about sinners. Two sons. One went off and lived like a heathen. One stayed by his daddy. The one that went off saw himself as he was, repented, and came back. And the father loved him. The one that stayed with daddy all the time, there's your Jews, got mad, swole up, and didn't want to see him be saved. What a beautiful story. They didn't think so. The Good Samaritan. You think it was an accident? That the two people, the first two, that went by and looked at the man who'd been beaten, there was a Levite, a priest. That's who he's talking to. The lawyers, the scribes, the Pharisees, the Sadducees. The men of God, in quotes, who should have done something, did not. They saw it and did nothing. And the hero, he's a half-breed. Mixed racially, mixed religiously. But he wasn't mixed in his heart when it came to compassion, was he? He's the one that did what the man of God should have done. Got the man up, fixed him up, put him in the inn. Paid his way, left extra money. Said, if it costs more than that, let me know. Humility. When I see myself, and sometimes I've got to get knocked flat on my back to be looking up. When I get hammered myself, it's good for me if it drives me to humble myself before God and to humble myself before my brethren. Brethren, the way up is down. The way to heaven is to humble myself before God, before men, to see ourselves as servants of all. I had somebody that sent me something. Did you see so-and-so on Facebook? I'm not even on Facebook. And what she showed me, what they showed me was bad. But I texted back. I said, well, how did she take it when you called her and talked about it? Oh, I hadn't talked to her. I said, then why are you talking to me? Right? I mean, if I see one of you guys acting up, if I see, I don't even know if Joey's on, I couldn't even find Facebook, but say I saw something on Joey. I'm not going to call Stephen and talk about it, right? Not first. Who should I talk to? Joey. Be part of the solution. Humble ourselves enough to the Bible uses that word condescend, to condescend, not the sin of being condescending, but to lower ourselves down, by the way, to a position we ourselves have occupied more than once, if we're honest. Right? That's the fallacy of all this. Well, you know, if we see ourselves as better than other people in that way, we're not in any way. It's just a different kind of sin that harbors in our heart as opposed to the ones they may be involved in. Luke 14, verse 11. Whoever exalts himself shall be abased. In the book of James, whoever humbles himself before God, he will elevate. Same thing here. Proverbs 16, 18, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. I tell you another one I like a lot. I give this to my boys a lot when it comes to sports. They get ready to go to the game. You know, the coach has it all pumped up. They're ready to go in there and whip on somebody. And I say, boys, don't forget what the proverb says. It's better to brag while taking one's armor off than when putting it on. Well, as a Christian, we don't take our armor off until we die. So get right with God, serve Him faithfully, look for opportunities to help other people, but stay humble in that pursuit. It's good for us. It helps us if it improves our prayer life. 2 Thessalonians 5, verse 17, pray without ceasing. 2 Corinthians 12, 8 and following. He had a problem with his flesh. Paul had some kind of sickness, some kind of problem. I don't know what it is. I don't care what your opinion is. I'm not even going to give you mine. I don't care. I don't care if he had bad eyes, if he was ugly. I don't care what it was. Whatever it was, it doesn't matter. He kept praying to God to get rid of this physical ailment. And God finally said, Paul, I'm not going to do it. You are made strong because of your weakness. My grace is sufficient for you. Whatever it was that messed Paul, whatever was wrong with him, whatever ailment he had as he got older, it bothered him. Sound familiar? Some of y'all getting older, have a few things. I stand up, you can just hear things cracking in the morning. Those knees take a while to get warmed up. But God put it in perspective. Paul, what's wrong with you keeps you focused on me. That's good for you. Whatever happens for us, remember how Paul said, then people, they tried to preach the gospel to cause him problems. He got thrown in jail. He said, but everything that's happened to me, watch this, everything that has happened to me has happened to the falling out of good for the gospel's sake. That's the point. What happens to you is really of no consequences. What you do with it, that's who you are. That's what our life is. I could sum our lives up. I come back one day, they have a sermon entitled Choices. That's part of my favorite sermon to preach. But I got it from George Jones. Several years ago, he wrote a song entitled Choices. And that song has a sentiment within it. It says, all my life while I was growing up, all along the way, there were voices trying to tell me right from wrong. And if I would have just listened, I wouldn't be here today, living and dying with the choices I have made. But friends, I can sum your life up in one sentence and mine. If God gives you 30 seconds to reflect upon your existence before you pass from this earth, you can sum it up in one sentence. This is what your life is and mine. All my life is and all your life is the sum collection, the sum total consequences of every decision I have ever made. And that's it. Where you lived, the profession you chose, the spouse you have, the kids you had, how you raised them. But it's all that. It all comes squarely right back to Michael Light. What did you do? What did you decide? When it comes back to that, we are free to make our own choices. We're not free to choose our own consequences. That's why I should always choose in harmony with God's word, because God knows which choices render good results versus those which destroy. Some destroy quickly, some destroy like a deterioration over the years. They have a negative effect on us. Disadvantages or advantages when they make me more compassionate. I'm being self-aware. That probably is a weak spot of mine. Maybe not being quite tender-hearted enough sometimes. I've got a wife that helps me keep that perspective sometimes. But when I go through it, whenever I taste the defeat, when I feel the fear of some of these situations, that then at least can create within us some empathy for others. If I never stumble, if I never fall, I don't know what you went through. But when I go through it myself, it helps me be better able to help you. Look at James. Those of you who are spiritual, when you see a brother falter, restore such a one. And it goes on to say that later they may be able to do the same for you. See, that's how this life works. There's going to be times when you're the one reaching down to help pick somebody else up. And there's going to be times when they're going to bend over and help pick you up. There'll be days when you're the one who can illuminate the conversation with what you've studied. And there'll be days when someone else can help you learn more perfectly the way of Christ. If we're not compassionate, Ephesians 4:32, be kind one to another, tenderhearted and forgiving as Christ for your sake has forgiven you. You want to talk about some scary verses? That's one. James has one, so does Matthew and Luke, basically saying, with what measure you meet, it shall be measured unto you again. In the model prayer, Christ says, as forgive us our trespasses as we forgive others. Now, I hope you know me good enough just in the 4 days we've been here. I don't believe in compromising the truth for anything or anybody. But I had better be quick to forgive those who are repentant. I have in no way a right to try to browbeat and beat up on those who are trying to do the right thing. I need to show compassion toward those who have faltered and see their ways and have repented and are asking for forgiveness. And those verses point out to me, if I'm a real hard person, well, we'll see what we say. Well, just remember, next time you mess up, the God of heaven saying, well, we'll see what we see when it comes to you. If I want God to forgive me, and the method and manner in which I expect Him to forgive me is the kind of attitude I should have toward other people. And why would we not? That's our job. Luke 19, verse 10, to seek and save those who are lost. That's what we're here for. We're like a big old hospital. If they weren't sick, they wouldn't need the great physician. If they weren't lost, they wouldn't need saving. That goes for us too. If we weren't damned and going toward hell, would need a plan to extricate ourselves from that and point ourselves toward heaven with His guidance. These things help keep me compassionate. I don't know how many of y'all know Tommy Moore. Some of y'all may, some of y'all may not. Tommy's a great friend of mine. I've known him for years and years and years. I met him at his oldest son's funeral. He had a boy named Seth, diagnosed with cancer when he was 2 years old. He died when he was six. And we've talked, they were actually up in Delaware, and the way the insurance were, they couldn't even come home to their family. The boy died a long way from home. We buried him over in Dripping Springs years and years ago. But he said him and Carol, though he would never wish that on anybody else, that four-year misery, if you will, what that was, had to be to go through. I've seen pictures. It's terrible what people go through sometimes in those situations. He says, we have been able to counsel hundreds of couples with children with terminal diseases. So while it was not pleasant to go through, it gave them understanding of a situation that made them better able to help others. That's what you should do with the tragedy in your life. Every widow in this room, you know what happens every time someone dies. By the way, that's another good sermon. Preach on widowhood sometime. It's not very pleasant, but every couple in this room, unless you die in a car wreck together, you're going to go through this. One of y'all will remain. But instead of, now I'm not, again, there's a grieving aspect that goes, there's a lot that goes along with that. But we can help others when they freshly are going through that wound. And it never goes away, and it shouldn't go away. You hear dumb things, well, you'll get over it. You don't get over that. It's just your new reality. But you learn to serve God in that. We learn to stay productive in that setting. Anything that helps us be more compassionate. I would also give you 2 Corinthians 13:3 and following. I'm not going to read it. But that's one Paul does say there. When you go through these things and you receive comfort, you therefore comfort others. My job is not just to survive my trials. That's kind of where I was early on in the sermon. I've got to get through it, keep my head up. But my job is to survive my trials so I can help you with yours. And so are you. So that's one of your jobs as well. Final point. This advantage becomes a great advantage when it helps me have a stronger desire to go to heaven. You know, if it wasn't for the trials of life, you might not ever want to die physically. But the Word is written from a perspective, and the world is created in such a way as to make us want to go. I talked about my knees. I'm a young guy compared to some of you guys. Your knees hurt. Your back hurts. I tell them back home sometimes, if it ain't hurt, it ain't working, right? That's how this goes sometimes. But Paul says, though the outward man decayeth, the inward man becomes stronger day by day as we have trials. Do you ever sometimes just kind of think, man, it'll be so nice. And think about this. How nice will heaven be in the sense of not having to worry about all the junk that's around us? Do you ever just get tired of it? You turn the news on, you're like, how twisted can the world be? Well, there it goes. It got worse. You ever just get tired of that? You know why? Because you don't belong here. We're not like the world, brethren. We are citizens of another kingdom. We're going somewhere else. There should always be a part of us that longs for where we're headed next. This is not who you are. This is not how you're going to be for very long. This life is but a vapor. It appears before just a moment and it passes away. All you're doing right now in this lifetime is making one decision. Do I want to go be with God or not? That's a decision. Who you really are going to be is described for you in 1 Corinthians 15. Where you're going to be when you die is described for you in 1 Corinthians 15 and Matthew 25. You're going to be changed. I don't know what all that entails. We're going to meet the Lord in the air. We're going to go be with Him in glory forever. That's where you're headed. You know why you have these faces sometimes? Because you don't belong here. Now you're stuck here for a while. Make the best of it while you can. Become a child of God and take as many with you as you can. But these trials help keep us pointing toward heaven. I do a lot of funerals. I hate hospitals. I despise nursing homes. I hate them. As a preacher, I've got to go there. But I see a lot of broken people in both those scenes. And I'm the kind of guy, I love life. I love people. I want to come in and fix it and let's go. I can't fix it. They're not going to get up. They're not going to get younger. They're not ever going to be what they were 5 years ago. But when you leave there, it should put within us, I don't want to use the word anger, but maybe it's a little bit of anger. There's a fire in there. The devil calls this, and sin calls this, and it reminds us, but it's not always going to be like this. we're not always going to have to leave that nursing home like we feel sometimes. We're not going to have to leave these funerals like we feel sometimes. When you walk up to somebody, there's nothing you can say. You simply hug their neck and you pray for them. Those kind of situations keep us focused on where we're going. This is not as good as it's going to get. This is as bad as it's going to be. The life you're living right now is as terrible as you're ever going to experience your existence. You understand that? If you're a faithful child of God, it only gets better when this veil of tears is put behind. Colossians 3, 1 and 2. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 16. Hebrews 11 and verse 10. It's a great advantage when something negative happens to me and it points me back toward God and toward heaven. Friends, I know this little 30, 40 minute talk is not going to take away the sting of whatever it is that comes next. There'll be a problem soon. And you get over that, well, guess what happens next? There'll be another problem. And there'll be another problem. And then it's going to get real bad, and then you're going to die. Right? That's kind of how this thing goes from a physical standpoint. Well, it was depressing, wasn't it? But as a Christian, you're thinking on a higher plane. It's all just a part of the process. God doesn't change. Christ's love for us doesn't change. The plan through which He saved us doesn't change. The place to where we're going doesn't change. And the glory that awaits does not change. So therefore, don't be depressed down here. Smile. You give us a good example of how you face cancer. Give us a good example of how you face a nursing home. Give us a good example of how you face a sorry spouse that runs off. I'm not saying you just grin and just happy all the time, but we can get through it. God is big enough to carry us through the trials. He is eternally great in all of His attributes, and He'll save us. If we do not leave Him, He will not leave us, and He'll save us in the hereafter. Friend, if you're here tonight and not a child of God, you don't have those promises. You can have them by believing in the Christ, repenting your past sins, confessing your faith in Him, and being baptized. I was talking to us tonight. The next time something bad happens to you, try to find something beneficial. What is it, Romans 8:31? All things work together for good for those who are in the Lord. It doesn't say all things are good, but some good can come from it if we keep an eye on it from heaven's perspective. If you're struggling right now with some kind of serious issue, you may need the prayers of the congregation. You may need to sit down with one of the elders. You may need to maybe call somebody tomorrow and work. It may be something that you can't discuss in 10 minutes. It may need 10 hours or 10 weeks. That's okay. We got the rest of your life to prepare for what comes next. You need to respond to the Lord's invitation. Please do so now. Together we stand as we sing.